Think on your feet for our Fast and Curious 5K, a one-of-a-kind race hosted by WBEZ and the Chicago Sun-Times on Saturday, July 27th at Humboldt Park. More info and early bird registration at wbez.org/events.
I'm Odette Youssef, in for Sasha Ann Simons, and this is WBEZ's weekly news recap. Each week, we take you inside the biggest local and state stories of the last 7 days. Stories like these.
Illinois is now one of the first Midwest states to provide over-the-counter birth control.
Look, I may not have gotten every decision right, but at every step along the way, I followed the science.
This morning, we had a meeting at the ATF headquarters to launch 5 gun trafficking network strike forces, which we're going to attempt to take down these gun trafficking corridors.
Lightfoot's proposal would expand which types of zones allow for dispensaries.
After an emotional debate, the city council late today voted to create another police oversight panel.
The responsibilities given to this commission will provide our residents with an important opportunity to hold our police department accountable.
Joining us to give context to those stories and more, WBEZ investigative reporter Dan Mihalopoulos. Hey, Dan.
Hey, Odette.
And with us for the first time is Aaron Hegarty, City Hall reporter for The Daily Line. Welcome, Aaron.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
So let's start with City Council. They made history this week, voting in favor of a civilian oversight board for the police department. Aaron, what will this board of residents look like and what kind of power will they have?
Yeah, Wednesday City Council meeting was pretty jam-packed. So this civilian oversight framework will have two kind of pillars, I guess. One will be these directly elected district councils in each of the city's 22 police districts. And their exact responsibilities aren't spelled out, and that'll kind of be up to each community to work out. But they'll do on-the-ground work with each community and get input from residents on what they want to see out of the police department. And they will help to choose members of the 7-member citywide commission that will have a lot more responsibility. They'll be able to hire and fire the chief administrator of the Civilian Office of Police Accountability, or COPA, which investigates police misconduct. They'll be able to make recommendations on candidates for the police superintendent and members of the police board. And they'll also be able to approve policy for the police department, though the mayor would have veto power over their approval of police policy, and the city council would in turn be able to override the mayor's veto. But I think both parties are kind of looking at that as a win.
Dan, I want to turn to you because you have so many years of experience watching the Chicago Police Department, multiple mayors and city council kind of dance around this issue. What, in your view, has made these changes significant?
I'm not sure that they will be, and I don't mean that to be skeptical or even cynical. But, you know, Odette, both of us have covered enough things in Chicago to know that essentially this is a top-down place. All power emanates from the fifth floor historically, or from City Hall at the least. And the idea that power is going to be turned over, particularly on something as sensitive as police reform, where you have still enormously powerful interests like the police union working against it, I think the devil will be in the details. Time will tell if it's truly significant. May it be as significant as the mayor and some of the activists are saying. But I think of things like other issues such as zoning, for instance, in certain neighborhoods, what gets developed, what gets built in certain neighborhoods. All sorts of aldermen have made committees that will supposedly influence that or dictate what they do. That's how it's sold to us. At the end of the day, though, is that really what's happening? In many cases, I don't think anybody wants to be used here. I think there are plenty of people that want to be involved sincerely and authentically to reform the issues that need to be reformed, and there are many, but will that be successful and will it be implemented really in a way that does empower people? I think it would be significant, certainly, if that were to become the case.
So as the city council moved towards police reform, Aaron, some police accused of wrongdoing made the news this week. Can you tell us some more about that?
One officer, Nicholas Stella, on Thursday was sentenced to 15 months in prison. The Sun-Times reported that he was the third person sentenced for playing a role in an international gambling ring that was based in Chicago. Prosecutors said that he failed to uphold the oath he took as a police officer, and Stella admitted he was guilty before his sentencing.
Dan, I want to turn to you. U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland, who grew up in Lincolnwood and graduated from Niles West, was back in his hometown yesterday. And it was just hours after three mass shootings, including a highly publicized shooting of a party bus in the tourist-friendly Old Town neighborhood. So, Dan, tell us what the attorney general did while he was in Chicago.
So I think what he did literally was meet with top elected officials here, and also with some people in the community that are trying to deal with issues of violence. He was in North Lawndale at a church there where they have some programs to try to basically interrupt violence and deal with gang problems in those neighborhoods. But I think the larger goal here, when you look at someone who's the top law enforcement officer for a Democratic president, is to rebut the notion that's very popular in Republican and other right-wing circles that, you know, the Democrats want to run the country, but they can't even run these cities. Why? Because the proof is no more convincing than the violence that occurs in big cities. So I think the attorney general needs to show that, first of all, yes, they do care about these problems in Democratic-run cities such as Chicago, and they're doing something about it.
So, you know, one of the things that they're doing is, you know, they've announced these strike forces to target the sort of gun prevalence here. Do we know anything about what these strike forces will look like and what they'll be authorized to do?
Yeah, I mean, the goal, apparently, you know, as it's stated, is for the strike forces to disrupt the flow of guns into the city, because so many of the guns that are used in the crimes and the shootings and homicides in Chicago are coming from neighboring states with weaker gun laws. They're coming from the South, as the mayor pointed out, and from states like Indiana, which don't do as much as Illinois, frankly, to crack down on gun crimes. What these strike forces will do actually, and how they're different from what was being done under President Trump or what's been done historically in terms of cooperation between local and federal law enforcement, I think they were a little bit vague on that. And then, you know, Chicago has their own effort that they were launching right before they came to town. But Mayor Lightfoot believes that these strike forces, as she put it, will be a game changer.
So let's turn our attention to Governor Pritzker. Back in March, he gave back $35 million to his own campaign. And then just this week, he formally announced that he's running for re-election. Erin, any surprise around that?
I'm not surprised. It seems like people have a good feeling about how he handled the pandemic. You know, I think he noted that this week. So, I'm not entirely surprised that he is running for re-election.
Yeah, Dan, maybe you can weigh in on this question of reelectability. He was the person that was responsible for mask mandates that became such a partisan issue across the country. What do his prospects look like? Are there any challengers that we know of at this point?
Yeah, there's a number of Republicans that are lining up to take him on. I don't know that there'll be anyone of any significance in a Democratic primary. We certainly haven't seen that surface yet. And I'm not really sure that there's a serious Republican challenger to him. The one that's gotten the most attention so far is Darren Bailey from far downstate, from a place called Louisville. He was the one who went to court to try to challenge Pritzker over the lockdown and over various things that Pritzker did to try to deal with the pandemic going back to last year. And he's the one who is sort of downplayed, really, the threat of the coronavirus. And so that's probably a popular viewpoint where he's from, and he's a state senator. But is it going to be something that gives him any traction statewide? I think there are a lot of Republicans that disagree with him on that issue and on many other issues. So I think it's interesting because, A, Pritzker has going for him the fact that he has more money than anyone who's shown that they're interested in being governor, by far. And B, I think the Republicans are in a bit of disarray themselves. I think we talk about the divisions between Democrats who are more to the left and those who are more centrist, like Pritzker. But we also have big differences within the Republican Party between their far right and the moderates. And so, you know, I think that both of those things work toward Pritzker running in. I haven't known anyone who runs for office with the express purpose of just serving one term. I think being reelected for him will be a symbol of some success.
Dan, the governor also made news yesterday for signing legislation to make birth control pills available over the counter. The only other Midwestern state that allows this is Minnesota. Is the governor wading into some controversial waters with this?
In Illinois, generally speaking, I don't think so. There's certainly some people that won't like it, you can imagine. But I think in general, no, I don't think this is anything but positive for him. As a man who's in the governor's office, especially as a Democrat, I think the support of women voters, whether they're core Democratic voters or swing voters maybe in suburban areas, I think this only helps him with them.
That's WBEZ's Dan Mihalopoulos. Also along with us on the recap for the first time is Aaron Hegarty of The Daily Line. Dan, Aaron, let's get a little preview of some of the other stories we're hitting this week.
University of Chicago has done it, so have a growing number of Illinois universities. A vaccine mandate.
Tonight, Mayor Lori Lightfoot stands behind her decision to rock on with Lollapalooza next week, although she is threatening to reimpose restrictions if things don't improve.
Chicago City Council has given the green light for a plan to transform the old site of the Michael Reese Hospital campus on the south side.
It's over. The Bucks have done it. The long wait has ended. After a half century, the Milwaukee Bucks are NBA champions once again.
Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot says the city's Park District does not need extra resources to investigate claims of widespread sexual abuse among lifeguards.
Dan, you've been spending a lot of time digging into a story that impacts us all in the summertime. It had to do with lifeguards in Chicago and now in Evanston as well. First off, what's the latest on what's happening in Evanston?
So a week ago that we reported on widespread complaints of more than 50 lifeguards and other beach workers in Evanston, which has six beaches on Lake Michigan, of course. They filed a petition saying that they had been witnessing or personally experiencing in every one of their cases some awful instances of sexual harassment, even rape. Now, that was brought to the attention of people in Evanston at City Hall close to a year ago now. And yet nothing really had happened beyond sexual harassment training, and they never issued an apology, which is what the lifeguards had asked for in the petition. We published that story last Friday, and they hold a special meeting the very next day of the city council. And a couple of days later, on Monday, I think it was, they came out with the announcement that they're taking this very seriously, and they're hiring an outside law firm to investigate. We also found out that the top HR person at the city was put on paid administrative leave as a result of this situation.
And what about the lifeguard scandal involving the Chicago Park District? Where are we with that?
So at the same time that all this was going on in Evanston, there was an inspector general's investigation that began 16, 17 months ago now in the city of Chicago into substantially similar allegations. That also went on in secrecy for a very long time. In April, we reported on that investigation. We reported on some of the first findings against male senior lifeguards who were accused of this sort of behavior. But in Chicago, there's been talk that the Park District's Inspector General is really understaffed to deal with something of this magnitude, which really is unprecedented because they're looking at dozens of cases. And this week, Mayor Lightfoot said, well, I think that that's not the problem. I don't think it's a problem that the Inspector General is understaffed at the Park District. And she opposed the proposal from a couple of other aldermen who want city government's own inspector general, you know, which is a separate agency, to join in on this now 17-month-old investigation because it seems to be dragging amid a lack of proper resources.
Sounds like these two cities are handling this very differently.
I would say so, definitely.
I want to talk about the Michael Reese Hospital and the sale of that site to some developers. Can you tell us the backstory on these 50 acres of lakefront property?
Yeah, so timely enough with the Olympics opening ceremony today, the city bought the former Michael Reese Hospital site in Bronzeville under the leadership of Mayor Daley in hopes that it would win the bid for the 2016 Olympics. But As we know, Chicago lost the bid and the site has sat vacant. And so, yeah, Alderman gave the green light to three different pieces of legislation that set up this development to begin. People have referred to it as the former Michael Reese Hospital site, but Alderwoman Sophia King in the 4th Ward has made it pretty clear she wants it to be called the Bronzeville Lakefront.
What's the plan for it now?
All right, so it's going to be a pretty big mixed-use development. There's going to be this ARC Center, which is going to be anchored by this medical research company, Sheba, and it's going to also include about 5,000 residential units, about 1,000 of which will be built as affordable on site. There's also going to be senior housing on the site, and there's going to be a Bronzeville Welcoming Center. The city is going to put $60 million from its capital plan toward improving roads on the site and creating a public park.
So there was some other Southside development news this week, which was that the Obama Presidential Center has found itself back in court. What's happening there, Aaron?
Construction is set to begin in mid-August, and here we are at the end of July. A group opposing the center asked a judge earlier this week for a delay in the projected start date. And this kind of comes out of a lawsuit that Protect Our Parks filed earlier this year in April, asking, you know, for a review of the center's location in historic Jackson Park, and they want to put a stop to work that would, have a negative impact on the historical and environmental context of the area. So I'm interested to see what happens because we're getting close to crunch time.
Feels
here.
Like the saga that never ends, right?
Yeah.
Let's turn to some COVID news. We're all, I think, feeling like we want to put this behind us, but the reality is that the Delta variant is fueling a rise in cases nationwide and also here in Illinois. Dan, should we be concerned about hosting Lollapalooza in a few days?
We have to remember that it's outdoors, right? And that makes a huge difference. It was a little more than a year ago that I was out there for WBZ covering the May 30th, 2020 protests, which obviously devolved into a bit of violence and a lot of looting. You know, of course, I was concerned then being unvaccinated, but now I think being outside, being vaccinated, having a lot of people who are vaccinated, although not enough people who are vaccinated, I think that's reassuring. I also think when we talk about the rise, it's rising now, and it's concerning because it's growing from having dwindled so dramatically, but it's still not at the peaks and waves that we saw earlier in the pandemic.
Yeah. You know, even Governor Pritzker said he's going to be rocking out at Lolla. Did that surprise you, Dan?
Well, only in that his musical preferences align with the acts that are going to be performing at Lolla. I think once they made this decision, again, knowing that the numbers are not nearly as high as they have been, knowing that a lot of people are vaccinated, I think that there's a sincere reassurance going on there that this will not be a super spreader event.
You know, the Mayor Lightfoot and the governor, you know, signaling that, you know, something's going back to how they were before, you know, in hosting Lollapalooza. But at the same time this week, Mayor Lightfoot also, or the city, added several new states to its travel advisory. Are we getting mixed messages, Dan?
No, I don't think so. I think it's a real concern that in some other states, I think it's no coincidence that places with low vaccination rates are seeing the resurgence of the coronavirus. I'm more concerned about some nearby states, such as Missouri or parts of southern Illinois, where the vaccination rates are far lower than they are here, and the numbers are going up. Could that spread to us? Absolutely. So, you know, I've never been a big believer in these travel advisories, even from earlier in the pandemic, because obviously they're not enforced in any way. I think it's a mixed message. I do think that there are other areas where the lack of people being vaccinated causes me to certainly to pause from wanting to travel there with my family.
Yeah. Aaron, the Chicago Public Schools made an announcement this week about what masking protocols will be for the coming school year. Can you tell us more?
Yeah, so the district announced on Thursday, yesterday, that it's going to require students teachers, staff, everyone to wear masks, regardless of whether they're vaccinated or not. That's when school starts in the fall, or I guess next month at this point. But it's something that Chicago Teachers Union had been pushing for, and the interim CPS chief executive officer, Jose Torres, wrote a letter to parents, and he explained that, you know, maybe students will be able to remove their masks for, you know, when they're outside for things like recess or sporting activities. But yeah, this is going to be a requirement when students and staff go back in the fall.
Yeah.
They're also, I think, going to try and keep kids distance, though. I don't know. I've not been in a school recently, but I'm sure that's difficult to do.
Sure. Yeah. Dan, are you in Milwaukee?
No, I'm back now. I took the train. It was just a day trip.
Yeah, what brought you there?
So we're big fans of Giannis at our house. I mean, you can tell from my last name that I'm Greek-American. And so Giannis Antetokounmpo, the star of the Milwaukee Bucks, we've gone to quite a few games up there over the last few years. He's the first Greek MVP, and now he's MVP of the NBA Finals. And, you know, it's a nice town to visit as well, by the way.
So, Dan, what are you paying attention to in the news for this coming week?
Well, you know, I'm pretty much absorbed with these dual investigations going on in Chicago and Evanston. There have been a lot of developments in those investigations of abuse and assault against lifeguards. And I do think on a news basis, I could be wrong. We're always upended in our plans by various indictments in politics here, but I think we're settling into a quieter phase news-wise than we've had the last couple months, possibly. Can I hope for that?
There's always hope. It springs eternal, as they say. Aaron, what are you going to be paying attention to in the coming few days?
We're coming up on the city council's summer recess, so to speak. So, I'm also hoping for something a little quieter, but ward remapping should begin, set to begin soon, and I am interested to see how that plays out. I've not been a reporter covering Chicago for a ward remapping, so I'm really interested to know, you know, the nitty-gritty details of, you know, how many people are in a room at once, you know, drawing these ward maps, and will aldermen, take feedback from this kind of community commission that was set up to hopefully influence or draw a ward map. I want to see how that plays out, and, you know, soon the city's budget season will start, so I'll keep
It'll
an eye
busy
on that
again.
As well.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's Aaron Haggerty, City Hall reporter for The Daily Line, and WBEZ investigative reporter Dan Mihalopoulos. Thank you both for joining us. And that's this week's recap. To really understand the stories behind the headlines, make sure you hit the subscribe button. And take a few seconds to give us a rating and review. It really helps other people find us. I'm Odette Youssef. Thanks for joining us this week, and we'll see you back here for a brand new reset on Monday.
Have you ever wondered why anyone drinks Malort? Or if there are actually lobsters in the Chicago River? Then listen to the Curious City podcast, where we answer all your questions about Chicago and the region. WBEZ's Curious City is part of the NPR network and available wherever you find your podcasts.